Rolling.
This is the FedSoc Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
Quiet on set.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action.
That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today.
The FedSoc Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
When COVID hit, nearly everything moved online, and that adjustment was a little harder on some than others. I know we had our fair share of technicals at FedSoc, but in the end, we more or less figured it out. Mostly. Hello there, and welcome back to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Anne Hartley, your technically adept host. We made a film titled Pandemic Powers, Wisconsin's State of Emergency, exploring how Wisconsin dealt with COVID-19. Joining me today is Rick Eisenberg of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, known colloquially as Will, to discuss executive power and Fabick versus Evers. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you, Ann?
Doing good. How did your organization deal with the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, generally speaking, our approach to the pandemic was to focus more on rule of law issues and structural limits on the power of government. We thought that if we ran into court and started to argue for all types of liberty interests against public health restrictions, that particularly in the early days of the pandemic, we would lose and make bad law. People were afraid. People were uncertain. It was not the time to take on the old Jacobson decision from the United States Supreme Court. And so our mantra was that in a time like this, where people are afraid, that it is more important than ever for us to stick to regular constitutional order, and that we should do what we can to make sure that if we're going to have public health restrictions, that they are adopted in a way which is consistent with the rule of law, which generally would provide for the appropriate level of public input and avoid concentration of too much power into a single pair of hands. Because people were frightened during the pandemic, because they were uncertain as to what was about to happen, this wasn't a time to abandon the rule of law and to abandon the requirements for adopting law and restrictions on public behavior. It was a time to adhere to them assiduously, because by doing that, we would maximize public input and we would maximize public acceptance of whatever extraordinary measures we thought had to be taken during the pandemic.
I see. Could you explain for the folks at home what a liberty interest is and why it can be problematic?
Well, so a liberty interest would be my right to be free of something. I have a right to freedom of speech. The government can't restrict it. I have the right to exercise my religion. The government can't restrict it. And so if we came across pandemic restrictions that implicated some of these explicit rights, we might act on that. What we were reluctant to do is to say that we have a right to be free of public health restrictions no matter what. We have a right to have our business open. We have a right to be able to go into, bars and restaurants. I'm sympathetic to that claim. Under ordinary circumstances, this is something that we might place more emphasis on. But in the early days of the pandemic, people were afraid. And so we didn't want to make bad law by arguing for rights that would be met by, citations to this old 1905 Supreme Court case, which, upheld quarantine. And so we decided to focus on, well, how is it that you declare a state of emergency and how long can it last? And that was the issue in Fabick. When can you shut down schools? That was in the interest in a case we had called W. Chris. And how do you go about doing these things? And that this would be a better approach to take at a time when people were frightened. But I always said, if you're talking epidemiology, you're losing. Because if you go to the government, to go to a court and you ask a judge to conclude that COVID isn't so bad and we don't need to do all these things. Most judges, particularly in, you know, April, May, June of 2020, we're not going to be enthusiastic about doing that.
Gotcha. Do you think that there was a little bit of a shift in perception of COVID and what to do about it over time?
Yeah, I think that there clearly was, because I think that as we learned more, it became harder to insist that people would die if we didn't have strict lockdowns or if we didn't have strictly enforced mask mandates, because, you know, as various states responded to COVID in different ways, we saw that there could be some states like Florida that were much, much less restrictive, but yet their experience with the virus wouldn't be that different than, you know, states that were extremely restrictive. And so I think over time, those policy arguments about whether or not to, you know, whether or not to have a mask mandate, you know, whether or not to close this or to close that, they became things that people were more willing to listen to. But initially, that wasn't the case.
Absolutely. So was 2020 the first time that a Wisconsin governor declared multiple states of emergency?
Well, it's not technically the first time. And because it's almost funny, but this Fabic case that we want to talk about is a case where the governor was declaring emergencies in series, one emergency after another arising from the COVID pandemic. And the argument that we and others made was, governor can't do that. You get one state of emergency and the statute says it lasts for 60 days. And the response to that was, well, Governor Walker, just a few years ago, declared back-to-back propane emergencies. Now, I had not known that because, quite frankly, I don't follow the propane issue. But apparently there was a propane shortage in Wisconsin during the tenure of Republican Governor Scott Walker. Propane is used to heat homes in northern Wisconsin. He declared one emergency after another related to this propane shortage. And the takeaway that I have from that is that you should assiduously police the governor's power to declare emergencies. But this was the first time that it had happened with respect to something that was as high profile and important to the public as the COVID pandemic, and that was as consequential even as the ordering of a statewide mask mandate, which was the ultimate issue in Fabic.
Gotcha. So Governor Evers did have at least some precedent to rely on there in making these declarations.
Weak precedent. Nobody challenged the double propane emergency, but yeah, it is something that had happened.
Gotcha. So how did you guys get involved in this case?
Well, so, you know, I always say that the COVID pandemic turned out for me personally to be, you know, a little bit like the mafia was to Michael Corleone in the Godfather movies. You know, I thought I was out and it kept pulling me back in. You know, we fought through the shutdown orders and some related issues. We got to the summer of 2020. The governor decided that he would acquiesce and he would not try to extend his lockdown order after it had been invalidated by the court and legislature versus Palm. And it also at the time in the summer, it looked like the virus was receding, right? The cases were down. You know, in a state like Wisconsin, everybody is outside in June and July because you sure can't be outside much during the rest of the year. And so we thought that it was over, but then the case count began to rise again. And the governor was concerned and felt that he should do something. And that what he would do was impose a statewide mask mandate. Now, he could have done that or he could have at least attempted to do it by engaging in a rulemaking process, which is what the Supreme Court earlier in the pandemic period had told him that he needed to do in order to prescribe rules for COVID once the initial 60-day state of emergency was over. But he didn't do that. He decided that what he would do is, having declared a state of emergency, in March of 2020, which expired in early May of 2020, he would declare a new state of emergency. Now, nothing had changed. It was the same COVID virus, but he took the position that although state law limits a public health emergency to 60 days, he is perfectly free to declare a new one. And then after that one expires, to declare another one. And after that one expires, to declare another one. And our concern with that wasn't so much the mask mandates. Mask mandates weren't really enforced in this state. And, you know, typically, you know, in public places where, you know, you had a private grocery chain, private restaurants, they were imposing their own mask mandates, which they have the right to do. I mean, say you can't come in here if you don't have a mask on. So it wasn't so much the mask mandate that we were concerned about, but we were concerned about the precedent. And particularly if the double propane emergency was going to be thrown at us, we didn't feel that we could just let the mask mandate go. Because when the governor declares a state of emergency under our statutes, he has extraordinary power. He can enter any order to protect persons or property. And the emergency doesn't have to be a public health emergency. It could be almost anything. It could be unlawful immigration. It could be urban crime. It could be systemic racism. I mean, the definition of an emergency is very, very broad. And so we didn't want to see a situation where a governor could declare emergency after emergency after emergency and then essentially rule as an elected dictator during that period of time. And even if we didn't care that much about a mask mandate, we didn't want to see that precedent established. So the way these cases sorted out, Wisconsin has a very, very broad grant of original jurisdiction to its Supreme Court. Its Supreme Court can take a case originally without having that case filed in the circuit court and going through the trial court, the court of intermediary court of appeals. You can start in the Supreme Court. Now, there are criteria for when you can do that. Traditionally, it's very rarely been done. We've done it a lot over the past 6 or 7 years. We probably have had 7 or 8 original actions, which historically is unprecedented. And there were a lot of those during the COVID pandemic. But we decided initially with respect to this new declaration of emergency that we wouldn't do that, that we would bring a case up in northern Wisconsin in the circuit court. We judged that the Supreme Court was going to be reluctant to grant yet another petition for an original action. We brought the case in circuit court. We kind of expected to lose in the trial court because when you're trying to push the law, that tends to be what happens. We did not get the injunction we sought in the trial court. And then somebody else representing a gentleman named Fabick then said, well, look, circuit court's not going to hear it, so we're going to, or isn't going to act, so we're going to file an original action. We then participated as an amicus party and split the argument with Fabick's counsel in the Supreme Court in the original action case. His counsel argued the statutory issues. I argued the constitutional issues. And the issue in Fabick is as follows. Our law providing for the declaration of emergencies by the governor, during which he or she can issue any order to protect persons or property, limits those emergencies to 60 days. They can be rescinded by a joint resolution of the legislature, but even if they're not rescinded, they can only last for 60 days. And it was our position that this 60-day limitation is absolute. You cannot declare one emergency after another and thereby turn a time-limited provision, a provision for the declaration of an emergency that can only last for 60 days, into a statute that effectively authorizes an indefinite state of emergency. That would be an improper reading of the statute. And if the statute were to be read in that way, it would be an unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority to the governor, because it essentially would set up a scheme by which the governor could arrogate to himself the legislative authority that is vested by our state constitution exclusively in our legislature, our assembly, and our Senate indefinitely. And this can't be consistent with our constitutional separation of powers. And so that case was argued, we argued that case before the state Supreme Court in November of 2020. And then if memory serves, I believe in February of 21, the court came down and said, no, the statute does not authorize the governor to declare emergencies in series. And because all of these emergencies stemmed from the same underlying cause, and that is the ongoing COVID pandemic, that once the 60 days was expired, it was time to return to regular constitutional order. Now, that doesn't mean that nothing could be done about the COVID pandemic. You know, perhaps the governor could, if whatever authority had been delegated by other statutes to the Department of Health Services or other agencies to do things in response to control infectious disease, would be able to do that by promulgating a rule, engaging in notice and comment rulemaking with legislative oversight, as our Administrative Procedure Act provides for. Or one could, you know, believe it or not, go to the legislature and ask them to pass a law that would deal with the COVID pandemic. You know, that's something, you know, the idea of a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature cooperating is you know, perhaps in favor or not in something that we see a lot of nowadays, but that is something that the governor could have done if he thought that that was necessary in order to respond to the pandemic. In the event he didn't do it, the mask mandate expired. There was no more public mask mandate in Wisconsin after February of 2021. The sky didn't fall in. And, you know, the bottom line is that I think that we got a good ruling from our state Supreme Court that put paid to the notion that our governor can declare one emergency after another and then rule by decree during the pendency of those emergencies.
Mm-hmm. It really does sound like separation of powers is kind of at the heart of all this litigation.
Yeah, I think that that's right. And you know, it just is a great lesson for lawyers that structural limits on the power of government, that separation of powers is a tremendous liberty-enhancing device. And so when we talk about, you know, what we might do to advance the cause of liberty, absolutely we should focus. You know, the Bill of Rights and the very important liberties that it confers. We should talk about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, you know, due process. Obviously, lawyers disagree about whether or not that there are additional rights that are not enumerated in the text, whether there are unenumerated rights. We can have that debate, but we shouldn't forget that these structural limitations on the power of government are really a bulwark against abuse, a defense of liberty, and very, very important to avoid the concentration and abuse of power.
Music to my ears right there. Well, thank you, Rick, for joining us today for another episode of the FedSoc Films podcast. Where can our listeners go to learn more about your work at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty?
Well, you can go to www.will-law.org. We have a website there that will fill you in on all the work that we're doing. I think we do a lot of great work. I always say that I've reached the point in life where a big part of my job is to take credit for what younger people do. And I got to tell you, my younger colleagues exhaust me with all the credit taking that they force me to do. And so a lot of good stuff happening at our organization and many other similar organizations across the country.
It certainly sounds like you guys have got your hands full. Thanks again, Rick, and thank you folks for giving us a listen. If you want to find out more about what happened in Fabick versus Evers, you can find our film, Pandemic Powers, Wisconsin State of Emergency, on our YouTube channel or at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.